Hey everybody, Rob here, just getting you set up before you listen to Josh Wigler interview Marty Piombo on this week's Survivor recap here on RHAP. If you hadn't heard during the Survivor Know-It-Alls, I am beginning a couple days of paternity leave as Nicole gets ready to have baby number two, hopefully on Thursday, and I'll bring you any sort of updates if we have them coming up later on in the day, in Thursday or Friday. So as we are waiting on that, you guys get to listen to Josh Wigler talk with the great Marty Piombo from Survivor Nicaragua. I can't wait to hear it. Marty's one of my favorite guests to have on the podcast. I'm sure Josh is going to do a great job talking with him. Now, before you get to the interview, let me just take a moment and thank our sponsor for this episode of the podcast, and those are our friends over at Wix.com. Because if you need a website, why not do it yourself with Wix.com? Say you need to get the word out about your business. It all starts with a stunning website. Say you're Keith Nail and you want to start up a website for your tuk-tuk Uber service. Well, no matter what business you're in, Wix has something for you. Wix.com is used by more than 70 million people throughout the world. You could do it yourself without needing to be a programmer or a designer. Hundreds of designer-made customizable templates are available to choose from with easy drag-and-drop features. No coding is needed, and you can get your website live today. It's free. Just go to Wix.com and sign up for an entirely free account today with no credit card required. It's easy, and the result is stunning. So go ahead and go to Wix.com. That's Wix.com today and get started. And now enjoy Josh Wigler and his interview with Marty Piombo.
Coming to you live, not from Rob's apartment, it's Josh Has Rob's Podcast, and now here's the guy who has always wanted to make a clever, and now here's the guy intro joke, but now that I'm here, I'm kind of fresh out of ideas. It's me, Josh Wigler. Hello, everybody. Welcome to a very special edition of Rob Has a Podcast. No Rob Cesternino right now. He is away. He and Nicole, hopefully, fingers crossed, knock on some wood, that baby Cessy number two, Electric Boogaloo, might be happening right now as I'm recording this. That would be really fun. So Rob asked me to pinch hit for him on the exit interview today with Andrew Savage. That should be up on robhasawebsite.com right now if you haven't gone ahead and checked that out. And I'm also going to fill in again today for the recap show, so we don't leave you without a recap show this week. And we are talking today with Survivor Nicaragua's very own Marty Piombo. I'm really stoked about this. I'm very stoked to talk to Marty. Anyone who listened to the Evolution of Strategy Volume 3 knows that he's a really big character in that final stretch of the audiobook. So I don't know. Outside of damn Judd Sargent, man, this is pretty much the guy I wanted to talk to the most today, man. So I'm happy. I'm very excited to talk to Marty. This is going to be fun. If you haven't listened to Evolution of Strategy, by the way, and I don't blame you if you haven't, it's a commitment. It's a lot of hours, hundreds of hours of your life that you're getting yourself into. But you can get some of the chapters piecemeal, and some of them are actually still available for free. The Nicaragua chapter is one such chapter. You can go to robhasawebsite.com/store. Track down the Nicaragua chapter and use the promo code MOP, as in Medallion of Power. And that way you can give this thing a test drive. You can give the audiobook a test drive and see if it's for you. Might not be. Totally fine if it's not. Apologies in advance, because I will absolutely be making some Evolution of Strategy references here with Marty. This is not just an apology to the listeners. It's an apology to Marty if Marty is listening to this. I will not apologize once I get on the air. But no, I'm excited to talk to Marty. I think he's one of those names that a lot of people have brought up in terms of survivors we'd like to see again on the show. I think a lot of people, myself included, thought that he would be on the second chance ballot once the rumors of the season were starting to heat up, and he was nowhere to be found. I was surprised. So I'll definitely ask him about that. I'll dig into that with Marty and see why he wasn't in the mix for the show. Can't imagine it's because he said no. So we'll find out what's going on there. And then also, obviously, get his take on how he's enjoying the season right now, what he thought of last night's episode, who he likes this season, who he doesn't like this season. If there's one thing that we know about Marty from his appearance on the show in Nicaragua, he's not a guy that really holds back much. So I'm sure he's got some sharp opinions. So we'll ask him all about that. And I definitely have a few questions about Nicaragua that I want to dig into as well. So we'll get into a bit of that, and we'll get into your questions as well. You guys hooked me up with a ton of great questions, not just for the Savage interview, but for this interview with Marty as well. I really appreciate it. And yeah, that's pretty much it. That's the setup. That's what you're getting into today. Conversation with Marty, talking about Savage, talking about all things Survivor. So without further ado, it is my distinct honor to introduce this man, the man with the coolest hair of any Survivor who has played in Nicaragua outside of Vince Sly. the time-traveling disciple of the great chess grandmaster Guillermo Vilas. He's coming in hot with a bag of hammers to award to somebody. I present to you the man, the myth, the legend, Marty Piombo, or, as he is known to some, Mr. Farty.
Ah, Josh, thank you. You humble me.
I humble you. I broke out the Jane voice immediately, so just to really just like get us into the right frame of mind.
It raised the hair on the back of my neck visibly, is all I can tell you.
Oh, man. Marty, I'm stoked to talk to you. I'm a big fan of yours. When Rob told me that he needed somebody to fill in for the podcast this week while he was out to, you know, bring baby Cesternino number two into the world with Nicole, you were number one on the call sheet for me. This is the one that I wanted. I was really, really adamant. I want Marty Piombo.
Awesome. Well, you flatter me, and it's always super fun. I mean, to talk to folks that really follow the game, that love to talk strategy. That's why it's always great to be on the show. I haven't talked to you guys in a while, so for me, it's also an honor to be on, and it's always fun. I mean, it's just great fun to talk about the season and to reminisce in the event that people even care about what happened 5 years ago in Nicaragua. So I think all in, man.
They care a little bit. You know, probably not a ton. It is Nicaragua. I know that you feel the same way.
Yep.
They care. They care about Marty. They want to hear what's going on with Marty. So what is going on with Marty before we even get into Cambodia? I know it was your birthday this week. Happy belated.
Thank you very much. Yep, I had my birthday yesterday, which, as we were talking about, you know, 5 years ago, almost to the day, was when I got booted off Survivor Nicaragua. So kind of funny, kind of, you know, fortuitous timing that way that we get to chat today. But no, man, just been heads down, working hard, and you know, staying busy and always hoping, dreaming that maybe you get another shot at the show. And I'm sure we'll talk about that sometime, but loving this season and really excited to talk about it.
Yeah. Well, so there's a bunch of reasons why I wanted to talk to you, just outside of the fact that I thought that you were hilarious on your season. You've got great insight into the game. But I think, like, for this specific moment in time, you know, you've got experience with immunity idols from your season. You were somebody who was in both the majority and in minority positions on your season. You were outspoken at tribal councils during your season, the way that we're seeing Sierra this season. So maybe you can relate with that. You're the second juror from your season. That's where we're up to right now. And as you just alluded to, I feel strongly that you should have absolutely been on the ballot for Second Chance at the very least. Though maybe you are on Second Chance because secretly you're Spencer Bledsoe from the future. Have you heard this theory?
I have, and I'm a big fan of his too. Yeah. So,
well, you're a big fan of yourself, is what you're trying to say.
Exactly, more or less.
Yeah, but there's a lot going on there. And for people who don't get that joke, we talked about this a lot on the Evolution of Strategy, which was the audiobook that Rob Cesternino and I recorded over the past year or so. And in the Nicaragua chapter, it's Nicaragua. We're getting a little loopy. You know, there's not a ton of strategy to unpack from that season, but there was some weird time travel wonkiness that went on where we all thought that Jimmy T looks like Malcolm Freeberg. And then we decided that you're kind of like, you're like an older Spencer. And it's really only because your name is Marty and we made an easy Back to the Future joke.
I'm all in on that, and I'm willing to buy into it.
So what's your take on the season so far? You know, it's obviously this is the third time we've done full fledged All Stars. It was this season where we're bringing people back who have not won before, only their second chance at Survivor. So only 2-time players. What's your take on the season overall so far?
Overall, I mean, I was really stoked. I love the idea of America voting. I was generally, you know, most of the people there, most of the people that are on right now, I really, well, there are a couple exceptions. There always are. But for the most part, I really love a bunch of the people. And I was voting every day for a handful of them that I've really enjoyed over time. And as somebody that's played before, you just know how intense it must be to go back. And as we were chatting a few minutes ago, you know, coming back for a second chance like this with all these kind of players is got to be, if the game isn't mind bending enough to have people like this, like Fishback and others playing, it's got to be so intense and so stressful. I mean, so I think it's awesome. I think it's great. And it's unpredictable. And this game can change so quickly and so whimsically. I'm really enjoying it. I mean, you want to have an outcome every week where you feel that you're stumped and that you can't really predict who the heck's going to go home. And for me, that was the case last night. And unless you lead me to believe that somehow I missed something incredible and that should have been a walk in the park to figure it out, I mean, that's the kind of episode that you want. And much as I was super bummed that Savage went home, it's really exciting.
Yeah, no, it was a jaw dropper. I don't think that anyone saw it coming. I think that a lot of the editing in the episode last night was leading us to believe that maybe this was Fishback's time, especially once Joe was immune. Steven had been really in the limelight of the episode, talking about trying to go after Joe. He's been trying to do it for weeks, wasn't going to have the chance now. And you saw Savage overhearing Steven's plans to go after Joe, talking to Tasha. And Savage was very eager to go after Steven. Ultimately, Jeremy, it seems like, is able to convince Savage not to do this, and they stick to the plan. They're going for Wentworth, dumping all the votes on Wentworth. Out comes an idol, and see you later, Savage. So I don't know. I don't know that there were too many signs to look for in terms of I could have seen that coming. It was a jaw dropper. It was a real stunner.
Yeah, and that's what you want. I mean, I didn't want to see Savage go home, but you know, as a viewer and even as a previous player, I mean, you don't want to know what's going to happen, and you certainly don't want this sort of cascading effect where one person gets voted off, and you sort of feel like, wow, for the next four episodes, I'm pretty sure you know that they're going to pick off XYZ,
right?
And that just takes a lot out of the game, and definitely not happening this season. So I'm super stoked, really, really enjoying the season.
Well, so let's start with the guy then who shares, you know, you're right around the same timing exit wise. He's the second juror. His exit episode is right around the time that your exit episode aired 5 years ago. 5 years later, here comes Savage. You said you didn't want to see Savage go. What was your take on Savage this season, right up until he left and through his exit?
Well, I know Savage, and I know that getting on again has been, you know, like it is for almost everybody that's there. But I think particularly for him, he had a lot of history in this game. He went out way too early the first time he played. The kind of guy that deserved to play again. And I also think, you know, it's kind of funny because I don't know if I've shared this before, but, you know, the first time I went on and during the casting process, you know, they always ask you what kind of players, you know, you would like to be like, or that you really, you know, sort of look at as your favorite, you know? And so, of course, I started rattling off people like Dietz and people like Savage. People are, you know, at the end of the day, immediately, you know, like Westman, that, you know, these are hero type guys. And I was told very quickly, whoa, 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 like, don't even think, like, dude, you're definitely not a hero.
Oh, man.
So it's still, you know, even though
did they compare you to anybody, anyone that you remember?
No, but I mean, most of my casting process was, I mean, I shifted gears, and I would be very cutthroat. There's no question about that. And cutthroat typically leads to more of a villainesque type character. I never got that far in my season. I mean, I never was really a conniving, lying schemer. Would have been if I had gotten far enough to really, you know, deploy those kind of tactics. But, you know, leading up to when I left the game, for the most part, it was just a scrambler and somebody that tried to just play strategically. But I guess what I'm getting at is that he's the kind of character that I enjoy seeing go deep. I mean, there's other players that I really like watching too. Like, there's nothing wrong with the Tony Vlachos, and I think he's one of the best to ever play the game. But I just felt that Savage went too early. He got another shot. He made it to the jury. That's an important milestone for him. And it's nice to see a player like that get further.
Yeah, know? I mean, he's been playing with this old school mentality this season, or he was playing with this old school mentality of let's get our alliance together, let's stick with our numbers, let's ride that through, which is, you know, it's been defined this season. You know, it was talked about in the first couple of episodes as like beach people versus shelter people when you were looking over at Takeo. It's very much the old school versus new school mindset. You know, is that, do you think that's the way to play this season right now when you're looking at this field? Do you think that that's the right way to go, the way that Savage and Jeremy and those people are trying to stick together?
Well, listen, right? It's always easy to say it should be this way or that way or old school versus, you know, but everybody knows at the end of the day, no matter how you want to talk about it, the game is all about numbers. And you could talk about old school versus, you know, new school versus old versus young versus whatever, but at the end of the day, the only thing that makes sense and the only thing that's right is whatever gets you the numbers. And I think that, you know, from just, you know, who Savage is and other players were like him, you know, Deeds is like this to some extent too, which is, you know, in their mind, quote unquote, old school just means he's a guy that believes in honor, believes in sticking to his word, believes in, you know, being the kind of guy that lives up to what he said he was going to do. So if that's old school, then that's Savage. But I know that Savage would have made the right move at the right time And, you know, part of it was, you know, trying to move, you know, Fishback out, who was quote unquote, you know, if you look at how Jeremy was playing it, which I think is brilliant. And I was a big fan of Jeremy getting voted on for this season. He's being super smart. I mean, he was, you know, thinking super smart, and there's a lot less collateral damage by going with somebody else other than Fishback. But as you saw last night, and as can happen with any episode, you know, you keep somebody like a Fishback, you know, around for one more episode, and God knows what can happen in between.
Right.
And he's a smart player. So anyway, that's my take. That's how I would summarize Savage. Really enjoyed watching him play, and yeah, it's awesome.
Well, he you know, he did want to go after Fishback. Him and Joe had been talking about it. Jeremy is able to turn the tide on that vote. But do you think for Savage, is that, I mean, obviously not voting for Wentworth would have been great considering she plays her idol. But do you think that that would have been the move? Should Savage have stuck to his guns and gone after Steven now, or would it have been too early to turn on those, the Bayon brothers, as he's been calling them?
I think when you look at this game this season, especially with these kind of players that are strong like this, you look at Werner, you look at Sierra. I mean, there were, and maybe we don't see everything that's going on, but, you know, their games kind of turned on very small but pivotal changes that they made at one point in time where they decide they're going to, you know, either say something stupid at the very end of a challenge, which then just completely flips the game for them in a way that I thought Werner could have gone far, actually. I expected him to go far, and I was actually really enjoying his game and his screenplay. But then you look at Sierra, too, and I forget exactly what it was, but it was like, wow, at one point in time, she made a pivotal move, and that kind of changed everything for Sierra and light, you know, in other people's eyes. So I think Savage was cautious in that, okay, do I really push this now? Because if you do, that can, sometimes it's like the point of no return, right? You can't unwind that, and that can get twisted into, you know, your core alliance thinking that you're no longer, you know, a real team player. And so I think, as he described it, you know, as a good lawyer, he made his point, he made his case, wasn't bought into, and he decided to, you know, pull back a bit.
Yeah. You know, there's the whole idol thing. You're obviously very familiar with idols from your season. You weren't able to sit on the news that you had an idol the way that Kelly Wentworth was able to. What was your take on Kelly Wentworth just hiding this from everybody and just, you know, flashing the badge last night? Was that pretty badass? Did you like that?
It's so badass. Yeah, cool. It's one of the best things of any season when people can actually maintain that level of secrecy, and because it's tempting, man, and you just never know when it might be to your advantage to share that and to gain loyalty and really strengthen alliances by providing that kind of insight. But in the end, I always do believe it is absolutely to your advantage to keep that as confidential as possible till the very last second that you can, unless there's something, you know, real strategic where you're going to use it for a blindside and you need to orchestrate that with other players. But no, there's nothing better than, especially with the vote looking like it was last night. I mean, that's crazy. It was, yeah, that was absolutely awesome.
So as somebody who's had an idol in the past and your spot got blown up big, you know, it became a very public thing that Marty Piombo's got the idol. How hard is it to keep that on lockdown? You know, like how much respect should we be giving to Kelly and even Jeremy, who nobody knows that he has an idol? How difficult is it to keep that secret?
I think it's super difficult. And I think, you know, it's everything from where do you hide it? Where do you keep it? And I think just mostly having the self-discipline to not share it and not divulge the secret. It's just one of those things that a lot of people are just sort of like, I just can't help myself. You know, I got to tell somebody that I got this idol, you know, because you want to share it. And it's also, you think it's awesome that you found it, that you have it. And the tendency or the natural inclination would be to, you know, want to strategize with somebody or share it. So I don't think it's easy at all to keep that in.
Yeah. I know you're a Savage fan. Wentworth uses the idol to get rid of him, and maybe as a fan that bums you out, but what do you think that this does for the season? Andrew was a guy who was, he was really loyal with his group. That group did not seem to be wavering at all. Do you think that this really busts things open for them pretty big, or do you feel like this is something that these guys are going to be able to recover from and it's going to be back to business as usual?
Yeah, I spent some time thinking about that last night and also knowing we would talk about it today. And I think, I mean, if you just look at the pure numbers, and why would you allow something like this to bust things wide open? We can talk a little bit about what Sierra had to say and her positioning, which I don't buy into. I mean, there's just certain philosophies of how you approach the game and the arguments she was making, I just think doesn't hold any water, or at least the timing of it holds no water. So if you just look at the scoring, why would, you know, so, okay, so yeah, amazing last night, fantastic, everything else you want to say about it. But if those guys don't get immunity or something, why would that core group of people vote any differently than they've been voting? I mean, you know, they should be sticking to their guns, and I don't see any reason why they wouldn't want to eliminate, you know, Sierra and or Wentworth, you know, next time around.
Right. So talk about Sierra's philosophy. You just touched on this. You say it it rings hollow to you. And you're somebody who was in a position like hers, I think. You know, you entered the merge. You weren't in with solid numbers when you started out there in Nicaragua. How tough is this position for her, and is there a compelling argument for her to make, or is she just in that spot where, you know, you really just got to say something?
Yeah, I think it's that. I mean, you know, full respect to her both for getting on and for playing. I mean, there's, trust me, I know, as you said, I've been on the top, I've been on the bottom, I've been, I've had to scramble, I've been in Spencer's position. So, you know, you got to come up with something, but, you know, I don't think, certainly at this point in time in the game, with as many players that are in the game, to say that you have to be playing to be the winner and at the top of your core alliance and to play, and she keeps saying you got to play and nobody's playing and nobody, like, it's way too early for that. And why would you ever want to tip to the rest of your alliance that, you know, you want to be the top dog in the very core group? I mean, I think what she's just doing is trying to, you know, ultimately highlight the fact that whoever's on the bottom of the core alliance should wake up and start trying to be the top dog. And you can, but there's a time and place for that. And with this many players in the game, you know, you end up putting a noose around your own neck sometimes by trying to make a play like that. So, you know, it's something that, why wouldn't you say that if you're her? Because, you know, you would love to persuade anybody to come onto your side. But I think it's pretty obvious and pretty transparent what's trying to be achieved there.
What do you think about Fishback's counter argument to the things that she's saying when she's talking about you got to know your place in the hierarchy, and Steven is saying, well, I think that this season is being played differently than any of the other 30 seasons that have come before this. I think that this is the season where there isn't really a hierarchy, or it's a flexible hierarchy. Do you buy that, or do you think that that Steven's off the mark on that one?
No, I think it can be. And I think that is part of the season. Like I was saying earlier, with these kind of players, you know, things can shift very quickly on just a comment, just a suspicion, just a, you know, a rumor, a piece of information placed by somebody to suddenly turn the strategy of how the game could be played. And I think that's entirely possible, especially with these kind of players. You know, a lot of other seasons, like I said before, can be oddly predictable and people are just playing super, super safe. And I don't think we've seen that this season. And I don't think, well, I mean, there's been some of that, but I don't think that's necessarily going to hold true for the rest of the season. I think these players are inclined to make big moves and they know that that's what it takes. I think, you know, Fishback's got a lot of reason to do that. I think he's got the history. I love that he's been wearing his emotion on his sleeves. I mean, you know.
Did you like it when he cried?
Oh, I just.
It's good, right?
It's awesome. I mean, weeping on Survivor can be awesome. Sometimes not so much so. But these guys are so passionate and so, and as probably not most viewers can appreciate, though, but you're down to, you know, you're down to the bone when you're out there. I mean, you're just so wiped out. It's easy for emotions to just bubble up and get the better of you. But I love Fishback's emotion just because it's from the heart. It's very passionate. And he has wanted to be in this position for so long. He clearly has, I don't know if I would call it a demon, but, you know, he's a lover of the game, a student of the game, and he wants to change the course of his own history and put himself on a new trajectory. So that's huge, right? I mean, to give up, you know, a chunk of your life to be back on the show again, to make that sacrifice, and then to have it play out similar to how it did the first time is just got to be, would be devastating on some level, you know?
Do you think that he's too fixated on the Joe thing, or do you think that this is the way that Steven should be looking right now? You know, he's been going after Joe for a while. He sees Joe as, you know, potentially golden boy, JT type of person, that it's time to take this guy out as soon as he's not immune. Is that too razor focused on one person, or do you think that that's the guy that Steven should be targeting?
I think you always have to be a little careful about how razor focused you get on any one single individual. Because a lot of times that comes back to bite you in the ass. And I don't know that I had a lot of choice around it, but I was definitely that way with Jane. And I think that Jane was definitely that way with me. And I don't know that it helped her a whole lot in the end. I do firmly believe, though, that Fishback's looking at this thing saying he is a huge threat. And we've seen people like Joe just got on a ridiculous immunity challenge streak, you know, where they're just racking up the necklace and they're just unstoppable. And, Fabio in my season was, you know, especially towards the end, like that was it. I mean, if he hadn't won those immunities, he would have been gone. I mean, they would have gotten rid of him. So I think Joe's a huge threat. Absolutely. I mean, I love Joe and I'd want to keep him around if I could, but I see where he's coming from. I don't think that's off base at all.
Yeah. I mean, it's one thing to do what Fabio did. It was, you know, a few immunities at the end. But if Joe, you know, Joe has to, I think he has to hit something like 9 immunities in a row if he's going to stay protected this entire time, which sounds daunting. It's never been done before. I think that the most is 5 in a row. Do you think that outside of winning immunities, is that really Joe's only shot? Is there a path to the end, say he's not immune next episode? Can he survive that? Or do you think that Joe is the type of guy that he's just going to get clipped the second he's not protected?
I believe, now, it depends, right? Because my answer to that would be yes. But you know how this game is, and I know, you know, you had mentioned wanting to ask questions like, look at Kelly B, for example, in my season. Like, you know, why, right? But sometimes there's not as much rhyme or reason as a viewer or other people would think to eliminating somebody. But sometimes the core group just, you know, has a plan, and that's the plan, and that's how they've profiled the threat, and they want to get rid of that person. So you could find that maybe this group suddenly, somebody's either really pissed at somebody, hates somebody, or something occurs that makes it somebody else more of a focus, and they go after them. And in that case, Joe gets spared. But I do think that he will most certainly be in the crosshairs, you know, almost every single episode, which is a bummer because, you know, he's great. I like him. I think he's a good player, actually, both, you know, socially and physically. And that, you know, but yeah, I think
he also has good hair too. So
he has great hair. Yeah.
Very good. Very good hair. What's your take on Jeremy right now? Jeremy is, you know, he's been in the thick of this alliance. He was tight with Savage. He's tight with Fishback. He's tight with Tasha. It looks like everywhere you turn, he's tight with that person. Are you impressed with what Jeremy's bringing to the table?
Totally. He was one of the people, that on my short list that I made sure to vote for every day and make sure that at least I did my best to get that guy back, on the show. Cause I thought he played really, really well, and especially his first season, I was just really taken by, you know, he's a lover of the game, and for folks that watch the show and for people that like it, I mean, I think the tendency has been, and I think that viewers want to see more and more of people that actually understand the game, love the game, and come in willing to play hard, as opposed to people that get on the show that haven't really followed it and don't have an affinity for it. So he's definitely one of those guys, and I think he's playing a really smart game. I haven't seen him stumble that much, honestly, in this game at all. I think he's playing a great social game, and he's great physically, obviously, but, you know, he's smart. I think he's playing his cards really, really well for now.
He was in a spot last night that I think that you could relate to, where Wentworth pulls out her idol and the plan is clearly about to go completely wrong. They had all dumped their votes on Wentworth. She was the one who was supposed to go. Now she's immune. And who knows where their votes, and who knows where, you know, Sierra, Kelly, and Abby, who knows where they're voting. It could go on Jeremy. Jeremy has an idol. Jeremy chooses not to play the idol. You were in a similar situation in the pre-merge in Nicaragua when you thought that you were walking into tribal council voting for Jane. And it ends up being Kelly B, and that starts to manifest after Brenda really puts you on blast at tribal council. They tie the vote. You did not play your idol, which I still don't understand how you had the how you either had the knowledge or just the nerve to not play that thing. But can you put us in that headspace? What's it like to be sitting on something that will guarantee you 3 more days in the game in a situation where the votes could very much be going your way and you choose not to play that thing?
Yeah, so I can only expect, right, because I guess, you know, what we're saying is that, you know, last night, as soon as Wentworth got up to play her idol, you know, Jeremy could have done the same, right?
Right, that's correct.
And I think, you know, and I can only speak from, you know, where I was, and definitely, I mean, listen, I'm not patting myself on the back, but trust me, it was the most nerve-wracking moment, I think, probably for me, of the whole season. when I was there was, do I play it or do I not play it? And it takes balls and I think just instinct. And there was a vibe during Tribal, like Brenda was almost too overtly going after me. And I almost felt like it was a setup.
Yeah.
There were just glances. Some of it was shown. Maybe some of it was not. But, you know, between myself and Fabio and Sash, that I just had this feeling like these guys were not going to screw me over. Like there was just something. I couldn't put my finger on it.
Yeah, Rob described it in the chapter we did on Nicaragua. You got framed. It was a setup. You got set up.
You got set up, and I just had this. There was just a something. I was hanging onto a thread, and there was just something either in Fabio or Sasha's eyes that I just said, you know, I could be going home right now for sure, but you know what? I'm not going to do it. And, I think this is bullshit. So I didn't, but that was it. And Jeremy must have had some similar something going through his head saying, I'm not the guy. And or something must have led him to believe that it was not going to be him, or that he definitely was not the target. So, and he made the call, which again must have just been. Yeah, must have been really nerve-wracking for him.
Yeah. Do you think that they played this on the right person, playing the idol, getting Savage out of the door, or was there somebody else? Was it Jeremy? Was it Fishback? Who should they have put this on if not Savage, or do you think Savage was the right call?
I think it for them, either Savage or Jeremy, they must have thought that maybe Savage was more in control, perhaps, and that was their perspective on it. I think it could have easily have been either one of those two. And I think they're really big threats at challenges. So why wouldn't you go for either one of those two guys?
Yeah. All right. Let's talk about your role in this season as young Spencer Bledsoe. Let's get some insight from you into Spencer. How do you feel about your younger self's game right now?
I think it's evolving. I think, again, it's driving me crazy just because, just knowing what it's like to have to be continually week after week and day after day fighting from a position, you know, of weakness and not having that really strong core that you can count on and that, you know, you're not at the bottom of whatever alliance that you've just, formed. So, I feel for the guy. So a lot of empathy and, I think the guy's honestly trying to evolve. I really do. I think he's given it his all. He's just a great guy. He's just a great kid. I think you see that. And when you're watching, it's like, why wouldn't you want Spencer to get further in the game? I mean, and plus, you know, he's a smart guy. He's a smart kid. And you can see that he's working on his social game. And it's not coming to him as an easy thing, but he's trying to make progress, you know, in the whole episode where he's talking to Jeremy and everything. It's touching, you know, so I have a real soft spot for him, and I hope he makes it far.
Yeah. You know, he was in this position for much of the early portion of the game where, you know, he was in control in that first vote, but then the vote was turned on him and Shireen at one point, and it seems like he could be in big trouble. It seems like he could be in big trouble when he swaps over to Bayon. Right now, he seems like he's fairly firmly entrenched in this big alliance that's going on. What does he have to do? Is this good enough? Is it good enough for him to just ride along for a while, or does Spencer got to think about making a move pretty soon if he wants to put himself in a winning spot?
Yeah, I think he'll be thinking about making a move soon. I don't think he has much of a choice. He's playing it as well as he can right now. And you want to stay under the radar. You want to go with the flow. You want to show alliance. You want to show confidence. But at some point in time, he's going to have to make a move. And that's why I said this season's good. These players are all smart. And I think they, for the most part, do believe in making big moves, which is great, you know, because a lot of seasons you just don't get that. People would rather play it very, very safe. So, no, I'm confident he'll be making a move. And like I said, making big moves like that really boils down to the numbers and whether you can actually pull something like that off or not. And Spencer's he's got a very bright mind. So he knows, and I'm sure he's crunching numbers and probabilities and statistics in his head to figure out, you know, how he can make that moment happen for him.
Yeah. Who else do you like this season? Who else is really standing out and saluting you? Who do you think are some of the standouts on this cast?
Well, I really liked Burner in the beginning. I kind of wasn't sure which way I wanted to go. And then I was just getting a huge kick out of his personality. And I just thought it was great. I mean, I barely remembered him from the beginning, and I've seen every single episode of Survivor since the day it first aired. So he was just very refreshing to watch. So I thought he was really good. Obviously, love Deets, just absolutely love Deets, and you know, everything his family's gone through and the whole backstory and everything now even made it, you know, richer to be watching the show with him on it. And I know how important it was for him to get back on. Love Savage. Love Spencer, love Jeremy. And then really on the female side, though, I didn't relate to that many people on the female side. The only person that that I was a fan of was Monica. And I mean, you can talk, you know, you could go either way on, you know, again, somebody else that, you know, one comment, one inflection point in your game, and it costs you the whole game, at least the way that it was portrayed, you know, the way we saw it. But really on the women's side, that was the only one. I mean, I would say there's probably, you know, a couple women that I just flat out didn't care for at all.
Give us the dirt. Who didn't you like?
I'm you know, and again, I mean, all these people, I'm sure, you know, I'm sure they're great people in real life and everything else. I'm sure they're wonderful folks, but Chaos Cass. I just don't like that the way the game is played. I just don't buy it, don't understand it, don't get it. I just didn't like it. Didn't like it. And I'm sure, listen, in my season, people either liked me or they couldn't stand me or hated me. So I get it. So yeah, but just not a fan.
So did you not like her gameplay back in Kagyan, or did you not like the way that she's trying to turn it around here where she was playing? You know, she seemed to be moving away from the Chaos thing as much as she possibly could this season. What aspect of Cass was in your cup of tea?
Yeah, I didn't, in neither season, just didn't like it. I mean, the personality is just kind of abrasive and just, and I don't buy into the Chaos theory. I think in this game, yeah, there's maybe a time where you can blow things up a little bit, but generally speaking, I mean, listen, at least from my perspective, you know, this game is all about a continuous profiling of the players and the cast, and they change, right? So every day in your mind, you're profiling people, you're giving them attributes, you know, are they reliable? Are they confident? Are they honest? Are they strong? Are they weak? Are they unsure? Are they unstable? And you're constantly going through this profiling of people every single day, trying to assess, you know, whether or not they're a threat. And in my mind, when people are chaotic or unreliable or unstable, then it makes it unpredictable. And unpredictable is not a good thing on Survivor. You want to be able to feel that people are predictable and that you can count on them. So chaos is typically a bad thing, and it's something that's born out of desperation. So we didn't see that much of it this season, and it probably did surface when she already knew that she was at the end of her rope and there wasn't much to lose. But I don't bank on that as an approach or as a theory that I think gets you very far in the game.
Yeah, but as a viewer, you got to love it. I mean, it's what keeps it unpredictable. It shakes things up. You got to appreciate from that standpoint, at least.
Well, I can appreciate from the standpoint that it gives you somebody or something to really want to get voted out of the game.
Fair enough. I mean, you want that too, though, you know?
Yeah, you do. No, I agree. Yeah, I totally agree.
You dealt with some Hurricane-type personalities on your season. Hurricane Nayanka, very famously, your rivalry with Jane. Looking out at this cast, are there people here that would have been really difficult for you to put up with? Like, for example, and a lot of people wrote in about this, they could only imagine how your interactions with Abby Maria would go.
Yeah, trust me. I mean, I do think about this all the time, right? And I mean, as I've rehearsed conversations, if you were to go through the casting process again for like a season like this, you know, I would say that the things that either people liked about me or they clearly disliked about me is, you know, pretty opinionated to the point of being controversial, maybe almost like a self-confidence approaching that of arrogance, etc. So I think with those kind of attributes that I have, it would be really, really hard for me not to get super annoyed with somebody like an Abby or a Cass. I think it would be super hard.
Yeah. How do you prepare for that? If you know, because I mean, going into a season like this, you know that those personality types will be out there. That's the whole point of casting any season of Survivor. You want to get people who are just going to clash. How do you brace yourself for somebody, especially in a season like this, if you know what the field looks like going into it? You don't know what the final 20 is going to be, but you know the 32. How do you start mentally preparing yourself for the fact that you are going to deal with, let's use Abby as an example?
So I think what you would say to yourself is what people say in life all the time, whether it's in the workplace or in a relationship, which is, can people change? And the answer typically is, yes, people can change, but typically not that much. Like, you know, on a scale of 1 to 100, you can maybe get somebody to change maybe a 10%, you know, like how far can they modify from their, you know, from their, you know, real personality and so forth. It's rare that you get somebody either in a relationship or in the workplace as an employee that is suddenly going to make like a 180. So can you adapt a little bit? Yes. But especially under those conditions, it's so freaking hard.
Yeah.
And it's just virtually impossible, and you have little tolerance. And that was part of my old school attributes. So kind of like Savage and those guys, like kind of weird, right? But, you know, when people steal and take food and everything, I definitely back then was very black and white. Like, man, that's just, it's just so wrong.
Cardinal sin, so, I think you called it.
Yeah. I mean, you just don't do it in real life. And you certainly don't do it out here where everybody's starving. It was funny because the younger people were like, yeah, whatever, you know, but yeah, I would have a hard time with it. Like I would have a hard time with somebody who was just being a bitch 24/7. Like that would grate on me. I would try to bite my tongue, but I would like to tell you, yeah, I'd be totally cool with that, Josh. I'd be mellow, uh-huh. And let it roll off my back. But something tells me probably wouldn't be the case.
You know, you talked about Jeff Varner as somebody you liked a lot this season. He was really strong in his first 4 episodes. And he was also somebody that you didn't have a great, you know, memory of. You didn't remember much about Varner. He goes out before the jury phase of the game in the Outback. Do you think that that's one of the takeaways from this season, that there are people deeper in the bench in Survivor lore that Survivor ought to be considering bringing out of retirement, giving them that second shot? Is a guy like Varner a testament to the success of the second chance concept?
Sure. Yeah, I totally believe that's possible. You know, but it's got to be the right personality, right? And it's got to be the right circumstances for somebody like that to be able to pop and shine during any given season. There's definitely people. I mean, the casting process is a bitch and it's amazing. And they do bring some incredible people onto this incredible game. And some of them do end up being duds. But for the most part, there's something there in that process that people didn't get there just by accident. Right. So there are people like him, and especially it's been a long time since he was on the first time, too. So he's had a lot of time to evolve as a person, and he brought something maybe different to the game this time around. So, yeah, I think any given person that's been on before that really is a player and wants to be on again, I think could end up surprising folks. You know, I got a huge kick out of him. I was definitely in his corner.
Where were you in the mix? You should be on here. Why were you not on the second chance bout? What was the deal with this? Is there a story? Is there something we don't know?
No, I don't think so. I mean, you know, I've been, everybody loves to say, you know, or at least a lot of people that have been on before, like, oh, yeah, I get called back all the time. I don't know how much that's BS or not. I mean, I can tell you for sure that I've been called back a number of different times. And I think I'm pretty sure that I've been called back almost every time that there's been returning players involved. But I'll be 100% honest. I was nowhere in the mix, was never asked and was not considered. And I don't know. I look around and I say, you know what? I mean, this is a game where it's hard not to take it personally, but it is really all about what's that appropriate chemistry and mix of people that are going to be good for the season. And, you know, I fall into, I'm guessing here, you know, that it's not about, oh, we love Marty, but it's like, hey, we need a guy who's old and fits the profile of being whatever it might be, you know, Caucasian, college educated, kind of an asshole. And yeah, we need that guy, you know. So, and I'm not saying that Dietz and those guys are assholes, but I think that, you know, when you look at the profile of this cast, the guys that were sort of in that older guy category were all incredible players. And maybe they were just, you know, they just said, you know, listen, with Savage, Dietz, and Varner and Keith, you know, who's a different profile, but they had the right mix, and I just wasn't, you know, I didn't fit the chemistry of what that was going to be like for the season.
I think you could open that up to a guy like Troy Zan, who didn't make it onto the season, seems to be part of that profile you're talking about.
Yeah, exactly. So tragically, for whatever reasons, didn't work out this time. Who knows if it ever will. With each passing day, you know, it's sort of like new great players get added to the Survivor family, and people, you become a more and more distant memory to players that don't really recall Nicaragua. But then again, you know, look at the players they brought back this time, and even folks like Gervais and stuff before, where, you know, that was a long, long time ago, and they still got back on. So you never know. I try to gear up every year and put the pedal to the metal just in terms of conditioning and everything else around the January, February timeframe when usually those calls go out to people and you keep your fingers crossed, but so far has not happened.
So what's it like to live in that place? I mean, that's what this season is all about people who've been waiting for the call, have been waiting to get back onto the beach, wanting to correct their games, fix the mistakes of their past, and really just have another shot at this thing. What's it like to live with that? You know, you've been away from Survivor for 5 years, at least in terms of when it aired, and a little bit longer from when it was filming. What's it like to carry that with you all these years later?
It's nerve-wracking, man. It's heartbreaking, especially if you've been asked back and you know, and it's down to the wire and you're literally inoculated and you're about to go somewhere and for some reason it falls apart, you know. It's a roller coaster. It's an emotional roller coaster. I can say that even the times where it hasn't come to fruition, it's been a positive experience in that, you know, it gets you on this whole trajectory of excitement and planning, and it does get you into great shape every time, even though I've tried to stay in pretty good shape. And then it's kind of like, wow, that was, it's always rewarding and to know that you were considered and came that close to being going on, but it is disappointing. And if you're a viewer of the show on an ongoing basis and you love the game, you're literally watching every single episode and thinking, how would I have done that? What decision would I have done differently? How would I have played it? You know, and your mind is constantly grinding away on all those permutations of the game. And that's how, you know, when I watch any given episode. So that's, you know, and you're doing that in the hopes of learning and taking all of those experiences perhaps to the one day that you get asked to play again and you can actually leverage a lot of that. So it's a weird thing. It's not, you know, it doesn't define who I am, but it's such an incredible experience. It's such sounds cliche, but it's a blessing to have had an opportunity to be in something like that. It's not the kind of thing that anyone, regardless how much money you have, you can't buy this experience. It only happens for any number of weird reasons that you get to compete in a game like this. That's just, I think it's the coolest game anybody has ever possibly thought of. And you dream of having an opportunity to do it better. Everybody wants to improve, right? Whether it's in a relationship or in a job or whatever it is, everybody wants to get better. That's the drive. That's the motivation. And you're constantly thinking about how could I be better at it? How could I, you know, how could I? And another thing, by the way, is, you know, Probst was not kind to me during my season. Like if you read his blogs during Nicaragua, I mean, he railed on me. I mean, he just abused me. I felt like he was definitely not a fan of Marty during my season. Yeah. And as being, you know, a, you know, player of the game, there's no opinion. I could care less what anybody else says about my gameplay, but I did care about Probst.
Sure.
It sucked to read this stuff. And we talked a little bit about it at the end of the season. And I know it's all just part of the program and everything else. But you would love to be able to play again and say, damn it, you know, I want Probst to give me some respect, you know, next time I play. And what can I do differently to get that?
You want to get back out there and you want him to be calling you Piombo. You want to be in the last name status.
I don't know that I would go that far, Josh. I don't think I can get that. But I would at least try to move up the totem pole and not be the guy that's being just abused. I know he was not happy with feeling that I was the architect of Jimmy Johnson's demise, which is not true at all.
Were you the architect of Jimmy Johnson's demise? That's what it looks like on the show. We debated this in the Evolution of Strategy. Rob and I, was Jimmy Johnson more of a quit, like a withdrawal he was ready to rock? How did that actually go down?
So I, out of respect for Jimmy, I'm not going to sort of allude to the second or latter statement there, but I would ask you to do one thing, which is always borne out by statistics. Go back and look at the votes the night that Jimmy Johnson went home, and you'll see it was a unanimous vote.
Yeah.
And what I would ask you is, why on God's earth would Jane and Holly have voted for Jimmy Johnson? Because I told them to vote for Jimmy Johnson. I mean,
yeah, you're that good.
No.
That's what it is.
I am not that good. Right. Jane still holds a Survivor record. Pretty sure if you go back and look at it, for having voted for the same person as many times in a row during the whole season. She voted for me when even her own tribe wasn't voting for me. Right. She would still vote for me. So no, it was, I was not the, the leader of Jimmy's, ouster. But anyway, I know that Jeff wanted him in the game, and Jimmy's a great guy, and so maybe that played a part. Who knows?
So are any of his criticisms, Jeff's criticisms toward your game, valid in your opinion? And to open that up another way, let's say that Marty gets his second shot. Let's say you get some Marty Piombo play time back in the books on Survivor. That's been a big theme of this season, is what did I do wrong the first time and how do I fix it this time? Do you think about that stuff, and are there specific examples of what you did last time that you would do very differently this time?
No, I totally agree, and I don't disagree with Jeff's assessment on a lot of my gameplay. I mean, I mean, you have no idea if you love this game and to get on it and everything, you're just, especially, I mean, the first time for sure, you're so jaded. I mean, you literally think like, I must be amazing, right? I mean, I have to be, I got on, right? I got selected out of tens of thousands of people to go through this experience. I must be awesome. Yes, I am awesome. I'm incredible. And you start playing the game from, a place, I think, on some level of being a little bit delusional. And the one thing that Jeff did rail on me, which is true in retrospect, but especially if you're a player of the game and you watch and all you've done is seen this on television, there's a pace to the game, like a cadence that when you watch it on TV, it seems like it's really fast. Like everybody's really playing the game and they're playing it all the time and they're playing it deliberately and quickly. Which in fact is, it's out of whack, right? Because the episode is a bunch of days condensed into, you know, 40 minutes of showtime, airtime. So, when I got there, it felt like everything was slow motion, like nothing was happening. I wanted to play the game. I wanted to play the game the way I'd seen it and the way I'd envisioned it. And I wanted a much faster pace than what you would actually have. So I was like rushing the game. And I think a lot of what Jeff gave me a hard time about was that, you know, Marty thinks he knows this game. He actually doesn't know jack shit. And
but that sounds like what he would want. You know, it sounds like he's the kind of guy, make big moves, make them fast, make them often. It feels like this is what he would want out of you.
Yeah, exactly.
It might not be good for your game to play that fast as we saw, but it seems like that's what he would like.
Exactly. And I think, you know, it made for good blog, you know, content, I guess. And I'm sure that he must understand, or that there were a lot of people out there that weren't Marty fans. So to be able to rail on Marty, I'm sure, you know, resonated with a lot of other people as well that weren't big fans of Marty. But yeah, you would think that that's what he wanted. I think in the end, I mean, listen, I gave everything that I had during the episode in terms of just humor and content, outspoken. And I think that's what they look for. Our you know, group of castaways were not necessarily all of that. There were a lot of players that didn't really know how to articulate or how to speak up at tribals. I mean, you know, it just they didn't know what they were getting themselves into. So I think I gave them a lot to play with, and I think it was good that way. And I did try to make big moves whenever I could. So I think in the end it was fun.
Yeah. Outside of Brenda, no one from Nicaragua has come back. She's the lone representative. No one on the second chance ballot, not even, you know, like Holly Hoffman, who I thought would be a shoo-in for that as well. Why do you think that is? And who do you think from your season deserves another look, obviously outside of yourself?
Well, I think Brenda obviously was a real obvious one. I think that our season had it was heavy on, recruits and not, you know, applicants, to the game that had been previous, you know, viewers and real fans of the show. So I think that's part of it. So it's kind of hard to bring people back like that. I mean, we obviously had people that quit. So Nayanka, I think right away, is not somebody, I mean, I'm sure she would, you know, if she had to quit, I could see them bringing her back for sure. She's just such a polarizing figure. So that would have been somebody that could have come back. Other than that, like I said, you know, my season, there's just a lot of people just didn't really pop, you know, personality wise or gameplay wise. You know, I mean, you know, great strategic player and super smart, you know, Jill on my season would have been an incredible player. And to see somebody like her come back would be awesome. But beyond that, yeah, there wasn't a lot of people that come to mind right away.
They should call Chase Rice. I don't think he's doing anything.
Yeah, I don't think, you know, there are people out there that, actually, not that many, but I've heard RC is one of them that have just pretty much flat out said not interested in ever doing that again. Like it was fine. It was great. But not interested in coming back. I think, you know, Kelly Bruno is also one of those people. It's not a great experience for her. And I think Chase has just a lot of other things going on in his career. But but certainly a Jane. I mean, I could see Jane coming back. I mean,
wow, look at you giving a Jane Bright endorsement. This is rare. This is unexpected.
Well, she did at the end of the day, whether you believe it or not, or if it's, you know, it is what it is. But, you know, she did win fan favorite. And there's always been rumors of, you know, a season where it would, you know, pit, you know, polar opposites or arch nemesis against each other. And I've heard that discussed anyway by different survivor groups and so forth. So there could be something there. I mean, I could see where if they had, you know, much like, you know, Cass and Spencer in this season. So something like that could work.
Yeah. If that was your ticket back onto Survivor to go toe to toe, tip top toe toes with Jane Bright, would you do that? That's thumbs up from Marty.
Hell yeah.
Oh my God.
Hell yeah.
Call him up. Call Pro. That'd be crazy. Yeah. I think another thing that's interesting about having you on here to talk about this season is Nicaragua was the first season post Heroes Villain. You know, a season that to this day is considered one of the very greatest, if not greatest, seasons of Survivor by a great many people. Followed up with Nicaragua, which I think most would agree is toward the bottom end of the spectrum. It's a tough act to follow with Heroes Villains. What forecasted a little bit, season 32, which is going to be coming up in the spring, it taped before Second Chance tape. How difficult is that to rebound from a big all-star type of season? Are you just in a really bad spot? What's kind of your forecasting of where things might go at Survivor next?
Oh, listen, I think it all has to do with the cast, right? I mean, obviously, and if it's a great cast, you know, like Cochran's first season was, then it's golden. You know, I mean, you could blow it wide open. So I don't think that just because this ends up being a really great season means that the next one's going to feel like a dud. It'll all be about, you know, who plays and how they play and what kind of characters are on the show. So I don't think it necessarily has to be that way. I mean, yeah, we were definitely made it tougher coming after what I consider to be the best season ever. But I just don't think there was a lot of things about our season that just were just kind of, you know, just kind of a dud, you know?
Yeah. You want to take some questions from listeners of the podcast?
Sure.
We got it. We got a bunch. We got them posted up on our Facebook page at Rob Has a Podcast. This is coming in from Jorge Alvarado. It's the obligatory Who Gets the Dumber Than a Bag of Hammers award this season. You get to award this here on the podcast. Who's not the sharpest tool in the shed for you?
You know, kind of hard to say. I don't have everybody up in front of me right now. What was the order of the boots in the beginning?
It started with Vetus.
Yeah.
It was Vetus, Shireen, PG, Varner, Monica, Terry, Wu, Cass, and now
Vetus. I'm going to have to give it to Vetus. I'm sorry. And that's brutal, by the way. That's another thing, man, we haven't talked about. But holy cow, to go through this whole experience, imagine you wait, whatever it is, 1, 2, 5, 10 years to get back on this show. And I it's got to dictate a lot of sort of the early gameplay so significantly, because dear God, man, you go home first and you should be like on suicide watch. You know what I mean? Like,
oh God,
it's got to be so harsh. But at least the way the poor guy was edited, and I loved him in his other season, but at least the way the poor guy was edited was just, you know, just look like, dude, what were you thinking from a social perspective? Like, take the foot off the gas, you know, because that's just not going to get you anywhere. So if I got to put somebody on there, that's who I would put.
You know, this was a question that was brought up a lot around the time that Vetus went home. And Vetus was talking about how if I knew that I would have been the first boot on the season, I would have rather not gone. Do you feel the same way? Would you rather not go back to Survivor than go back and be the first guy out?
Yeah, I mean, if you knew for sure, like,
well, you would know, you're the time traveler, so you'd have the spoilers.
Yeah, I would say absolutely no. I mean, it's just emotionally, it's devastating. I mean, it's just, there's nothing worse than that. And the only person I've seen that is just such a great person, such a great personality, I can't say enough great things about her, that has bounced back in such a great way and has such a good attitude on it. And I just know there's no way I could ever even be remotely like her as Francesca.
Yeah.
I'd be devastated. I'll just be honest with you. I just, that would just, you'd never be able to shake that off. It's one thing to be able to say, hey, listen, okay, I never got back on the show. Okay, I can live with that. But holy crap, man, I got back on the show and I was the first person voted off. You can talk all day long and say, oh, it's not a big deal. And, you know, I'm sure, you know, you have to, right? But let's be honest, that just sucks.
Yeah, that'd be tough. This is a question from Michael J. Clark. Was chess grandmaster Guillermo Vilas cringing at Joe's chess analogy at Tribal? Did you catch this? Did you hear Joe's chess analogy?
Yeah, I did. And I would have to tell you, I think Guillermo would have cringed. I think he was a little over his head there. I think Joe was reaching a little bit.
Yeah, so would Joe have bought your Guillermo Vilas lie, you think?
I think I could have, yes. You know what? It's just a time and age thing, you know? Like, I think I could have pulled it off. It's all in the delivery, Josh. It was all in the delivery. At the time, you know, my buddy Fabio, it wasn't really at his expense. I mean, it was and it wasn't. But one of the producers and the guys that were filming, they were older. So the guy almost fell over who was filming it, you know, because he was laughing because he knew what was being said. But, you know, Fabio had no idea just because, you know, I'm pretty sure all that went down before Fabio was even born.
Yeah. Paul Schneider had asked, how did you keep a straight face when you realized that Fabio was buying hook, line, and sinker? Sounds like you did a better job than the camera.
It was hard, but yeah, it was all in the delivery. I knew if it made the edit, I knew that it would come off as pretty hysterical. So at that point in time, you're so out of it that I was almost believing it myself.
Yeah. How's Fabio doing? Do you keep in touch with Fabio at all?
I do a little bit, actually, you know, cause I mean, I always feel like, hey, I contributed to making that guy $1 million. You know, I was part of his success, which always feels good because to this day I firmly believe that I cast the vote in the right direction, and he looks like he's doing well. I haven't talked to him in a long time, but I do get messages every now and again from him, and you know, he's married, he has a baby.
Oh man, no way.
He's got a house, he like lives up in the valley. I mean, you know, like, hey, everybody would have thought, oh, like Fabio was like, you know, off on a beach somewhere eating coconuts and, you know, barefoot without a penny to his name. But no, it sounds like, you know, common sense and so forth and maturity prevail.
A lot can change in 5 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. Who is looking at, who do you see in this as a Fabio in the making? That was another question that we got here. Who do you think this season is somebody who has Fabio potential? Somebody who maybe isn't playing the game super, super hard, but could go on some sort of challenge streak, could kind of get by on charm and, you know, just being a positive guy. Do you see that in anybody this season?
I don't really see like a Fabio character, you know. I mean, that was pretty unique what he did. Everybody just thinks, oh, he was just like, you know, a Spicoli, you know, but he was not a Spicoli at all. I mean, people that get on this show, you know, and even Keith in his own special way must have some kind of an IQ that got them there in the first place. So Fabio was kind of unique that way. I just think he played his card. He knew exactly what he was doing, what he was saying, and when he was saying it, and he brought everything else to the game that he needed to towards the end. So I don't see anybody quite like him. No, I don't. You know, everything's pretty obvious. These players are way, way more in tune than anybody was during Nicaragua to see that coming.
Yeah, I feel like Keith is close. You know, he's like the guy who just wants to get in the alliance, wants to get by on charm, wants to get by with good challenge sensibility. Do you like Keith?
I don't think that Keith even knows why he's there.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I get it. I understand the profile. I understand why maybe somebody like that needs to be part of the mix, but never been a big fan of sort of that personality and that kind of player. They're not doing anything. And I guess, you know, and Jeff, I'm sure, would say, again, Marty, you're an idiot. That's why you're an idiot, because, you know, he's going to get farther than you ever would have.
Right.
And yeah, maybe he's not doing anything, but that's playing the game and he's playing his game. And I'm like, you're a goat, and you know, that's what Fishback's talking about. You don't want to get further along in the game as a goat, because I don't want to be remembered as the person that was just brought along. And right now, I mean, can you tell me that Keith's done anything to really stay in the game? No, he hasn't done anything.
He drove the Totos.
Huh?
He drove the Toto. He drove the car.
He did, and that was huge. I mean, you saw the reaction of the tribe. That should buy him at least 2 or 3 more episodes.
Don't you think so? Yeah, I think so. Toto overload. You brought up Steven, so let me bring back his bring up his buddy Rob Cesternino, who obviously would love to have been here. He says, very bummed to miss out on Marty, but I'd love to hear him compare Steven's game with Sash. Do you think that there's anything similar between the way that Fishback is playing this game and your experience with playing with Sash?
Yeah, I think there's some similarities there. I think Fishback's a little more, he's a little more outspoken, a little more aggressive, and he speaks up more. You know, Sash was a man of very few words. Like, you know, if you look at, you know, any of the tribals or anything else, I mean, Sash would give up nothing. Like, it drove Jeff, I think, a little bit crazy, right? Because, I mean, he's trying to get people to solicit, you know, information during tribal, and Sash was way smarter than that. He gave very, very little, played cards very close to the chest. And part of that made him, you know, that kind of character that people felt a little uncomfortable with towards the end. And that's possibly why he got almost no votes, or any, I can't remember. Some similarities, but I think Fishback is a different personality, and he's more outspoken and more aggressive, I think, in the end.
This is a question from Jens Mueller. Who is your favorite purple, Kelly, the one from Nicaragua or Kelly Wigglesworth? Obviously a commentary on the fact that we are hearing basically Zippo out of Kelly Wigglesworth this season.
True, right? Which is kind of weird. Like, I mean, and what about, I'm sorry, but you know, if you notice the last three episodes, not a peep out of Abby.
Yeah, purple, like, Abby, it's real.
Like, Abby has gotten, like, literally not even a sentence in, like, in the last two or three episodes, which, you know, leads to a lot of speculation as to what does that mean. So I'm not clear, but no, Wigglesworth, like, I got a feeling that Wigglesworth is playing and she's talking and doing things. Like, Purple Kelly, literally, I love her, sweet girl. And, you know, we message back and forth from time to time, love her, but there was no gameplay there. Zippo, like, zero, not a thing. And what you got, you know, out of the season is what was really going on. That was not just an edit, you know. And so, I feel like Wigglesworth is getting the short end of the stick somehow. And I'm not sure why. Maybe she's being very deliberate about it.
Yeah. This is a question from Ian Kevin Sevilla. Had you been picked as part of the Cambodia voting pool, how would you have sold yourself? I think this is interesting. How do you think that you would do in the voting campaign, first of all, and what would you do to stand out from the pack?
Yeah, so I don't know all the dynamics of that. I mean, I've heard a little bit about it. I mean, you really do have to mount like a political campaign on social media, you know, to solicit all these votes and so forth. So I think a lot of it goes into that effort, and I don't know enough about what it takes to make that happen. But I think if I was going to be posting anything or describing, it's much like I was just telling you, you know what you're going to get out of me. It's going to be opinionated. It's going to be controversial. It's going to be playing hard, and it should be interesting and hopefully funny at the same time. So I felt like that's what I delivered my season. If you look at my season, I got a lot of airplay, and I think partially maybe that's just because of the rest of the cast too. But, you know, I gave a good narrative during my season. I think that's a lot of what they look for. There's good storytelling there. And I think for the older guy that I am, I think I'd contribute. I'd make it an interesting season. I think people would not be bored. And I think people would certainly not forget who I was. You know, it would be a memorable contribution, I think. And I think people want to see that stuff. Like, I want to see people get outspoken. I want to see people talk trash. I mean, I want, you know, you want to see all that stuff. And I never held back. So I think that's what I would deliver.
I think that for your game, I understand where you're coming from when you're saying maybe you played a little too fast, but for TV, good stuff. Good stuff.
Yeah.
It's probably not to your benefit, but for all of us, it's good. So don't change anything.
Thank you.
That's what I would say. John DeGrief writes in and says, would you feel comfortable splitting the vote last night in that eight with Steven and Spencer, who are unpredictable? What did you think about this? This is something that a lot of people are talking about, and we talked a lot about on Know It Alls the other night. That this was just every vote went to Wentworth. There was no split vote. There was no attempt on that. Why do you think that was? And do you think that they miscalculated?
Yeah, I thought a little bit about this last night, and I was kind of wondering the same thing. Like, why all the votes? Why didn't they split some? If they had split, how many, what are we talking about? Is it 4 and 3? How many total votes?
It would have been, I believe, 9. There's 9 in the majority, and then there was Sierra, Kelly Wentworth, and Abby. So it would have been 9 versus 3.
9-3. So last it was 9-3.
That was the
so
field,
could,
yeah.
So they could have gone like a 5-4 split, right, and covered their bases.
Could have done that. They could have done 6-3.
Yeah, I thought about it later because obviously during the episode, you know, they didn't lead us to believe that it was really going to be Wentworth. It's not who I would have bet. I mean, for whatever reason, I was leaning towards it was going to be Sierra for sure. I don't know why they wouldn't have split. I mean, everybody must have been. And hey, I guess, yeah, they had no suspicion whatsoever of an idol. Because other than that, everybody voted clearly the way they were going to vote. And, you know, they just... They didn't buy an insurance program.
Yeah. Tamir Markowitz wants to know, did you think that last night was a top five idol play? Where do you think Kelly Wentworth's idol play lands in the history of idol plays here on Survivor?
It's up there, I think, mostly. I mean, it's not the first time that somebody busts out an idol unexpectedly, but I think it ranks way up there just because of how... And we're yet to see how it changes the course of the season. But it's got to rank really high up there just because of the way the votes came down and how unexpected it was. And the fact that these guys didn't split their votes or anything, it just, and it brought down, you know, a power player in the season. So I think it's definitely up there. Obviously the seasons where somebody give their idol to somebody else in the middle of tribal, having the effect, you know, like when Poverty handed out two of them and made a play like that, those are the ones that are truly, truly, you know, tier one type, idol plays.
Christine Raddis wants to know, future Spencer, can you tell us how you end up doing on this season? And I think that she means, how do you think Spencer's going to do? No spoilers, knowing that you've lived through the outcome in the past.
Yes, yes. I think, I don't know that Spencer makes it to Final Three. But I think he has a good chance of getting pretty darn far. I don't know if he'll make Final Three, but I feel like right now, you know, sometimes in gameplay like we are right now, it's almost to your advantage to not be one of the tier one players that's going to be, you know, attracting a lot of attention for votes. So you're kind of in the middle and pack towards the bottom, but you're there with a bunch of other players, and he's certainly not posing a threat to anybody right now. So my prediction would be he's going to make it far, but I don't know whwhether he can make it to Final Three.
Yeah. Brendan Fitzpatrick wanted to know, what are your thoughts on time travel? And if you could time travel to any season of Survivor, which would it be? And what would you do or change?
Wow, man, that's a
heavy
one. That's pretty heavy.
Heavy,
man.
Doc.
I guess, you know, I would go with maybe the default, which isn't terribly exciting, but I would probably time travel back to my season.
Uh-huh.
If I could change anything about my season.
To Nicaragua or Cagayan?
You mean if I were Spencer?
You are Spencer, so I'm just...
I am Spencer.
Trying to figure out which season you're talking about.
Oh, got it. I thought they were pointing in the direction to Marty, not Spencer.
No,
Marty.
obviously Nicaragua.
I would time travel to the beginning of this season again, and I still don't understand. I haven't talked to Spencer about it, but I don't know, understand why he would have aligned himself in the way that he did with Shireen.
Why, why is that? What don't you get about that?
Well, again, not super annoying player. Sorry, I got to say it. You know, I'm sure, again, lovely person in real life, but dear God, I mean, I could literally have clawed my eyes out every episode that she was on. You know,
don't do that.
Then yeah.
Then you won't be able to qualify for round two.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, but yeah, no, like, yeah, it was really, really challenging for me. And as I looked around, I was like, well, who does she have that's a big Shireen fan that was on the seat? Like, I didn't see it. Like, I didn't see what that was going to buy him.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know why he would have chosen that as sort of a cornerstone of his gameplay. They're like, why didn't he go with some other players? I haven't talked to him about that, but that's where I would be.
Yeah. You're chess buddies with Spencer. You guys still playing chess?
We have not, although I did send him a pretty funny snapshot. I was playing an online chess game, and for whatever reason, the computer randomly gave the computer player that was playing against me the name Spencer, and I sent him the final shot when I checkmated, and He did not take kindly to that. He just agreed, you know, very strongly.
And then Nick Fishman wants to know, what is the best chess analogy you can think of for this season? Joe didn't have the greatest chess analogy at Tribal Council the other night. Do him one better. What's the chess analogy for this season, where the board is at this moment in time?
Yeah, I think the board is pretty strongly stacked in one direction. meaning that I would say, you know, one player has a significant number of more strategic pieces removed from his opponent's board. However, you know, still has a queen, still has a king, and they're in positions where it's not going to be fully easy to make those final compromising moves to move it into checkmate. So there still is an opportunity for pawn to advance and get converted into a second queen, and we'll see.
Who do you think that would be?
Wow, Josh, you're right on top of that crap.
I'm asking the question.
Maybe Wentworth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a strong position. I mean, that was a big play. Do you think that this is something we talked about on Know It Alls too, is that Wentworth came into this season as one of the biggest wild cards because she was very quiet on her first season. She went out early. She didn't have a strong edit. No one really knew what she was capable of. People know what she's capable of now. She just slayed Savage. Is this coming out party? Is this going to make her a bigger target? What do you think is the end game for Wentworth after that?
Oh yeah, there's clearly going to be a lot of attention on her. There's no doubt about it. I mean, but I think she's strong. Yeah, clearly. I mean, you just described it perfectly. So nothing like the first time she was on. And I think she's, with what she's got to work with right now, I think she's doing a terrific job. Yeah, I have no problem with her making it far in this game.
All right. And then I have one last question for you, just for my own curiosity. How many times do you think Fabio said man on your season? I kept track of how many times Judd Sargent said man during Survivor Guatemala, but I missed Judd Burza on Nicaragua. Do you have a guess? Do you have an estimate?
Oh man, it's gotta be in the hundreds. I mean, that's a lot of days to be out there. 39 days. You know, I'm sure he busted out man at least, you know, a half dozen times a day. So yeah, I mean, he's such a sweetheart, man. That guy's truly genuine. Yeah. What a riot. I mean, so funny. And it was great. I mean, the edits for him, I thought, were spectacular.
Yeah, he was a great character. Do you think that he'd be good to get back on the show someday, or do you like Fabio as a done in one?
I think done in one. I think he could go back on and play really well, though. I would. Yeah, absolutely.
All right, Marty, thanks so much for swinging through. This was a ton of fun for me to get to pick your brain about Survivor. How can people keep up with you? You're on the Twitters, yes?
I am indeed.
At Survivor Marty on Twitter. So people, hit up Marty, send him some love, tell him what you thought about this podcast, and love to hear your thoughts, Marty, as the season progresses. Keep in touch with me, all right?
I will, Josh. And again, it's always really nice to have you guys ask me back on. Really flattered, and it's always great to talk to you guys. So thank you.
All right, man. Thanks so much.
You bet.
All right, take care. There you go. Marty Piombo on the podcast. Mr. Farty himself. That was very fun. Had a good time. And now I'm just wondering what it would look like if Marty was out there versus Abby Maria or Kat. Doesn't sound like there'd be a lot of love lost there. That might be fun. But there you go. There's Marty. That's Marty's take on Cambodia. Maybe we'll see Marty on Survivor again someday. Maybe we won't, but I hope we will. I think it would be fun. I think it'd be fun to see him on the show. All right, everybody. Thank you so much. This was a lot of fun for me taking over Rob's podcast. You'll be back to your regularly scheduled programming soon, I hope. Pretty soon-ish, at least. Certainly in time for the next episode of Survivor, we will be back in business with another know-it-alls, and I know that Rob has plans for a voicemail show as soon as he can pump one out, so stay tuned for details about that. But otherwise, that's going to be a wrap for today. I guess we didn't do a hashtag. If you want to do a hashtag for this one, let's go with hashtag Future Spencer. That's always fun. So tweet that at Marty, at Survivor Marty. You can tweet that at me. I'm at Round Howard. Hope you enjoyed the show, and talk to you all again soon. Take care. Bye.